Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. In today's episode, we're unraveling a crucial aspect of financial operations, reconciliations, and reporting. Picture this. The payment landscape is evolving at breakneck speed, with transactions happening in the blink of an eye. Financial institutions and businesses alike are grappling with an unprecedented volume of data, and the need for accurate, timely, and efficient reconciliations has never been more critical. Joining me today to discuss this further is Mark McCarthy, Chief Commercial Officer at Canny, and Brian Riley, Director of Credit and Co-Head of Payments at Javelin Strategy and Research. They're going to delve into the state of reconciliations and explore why automation is not just important, but it's an absolute necessity in the current landscape. Mark and Brian, it's great to have you with us today. To start things off, Mark, can you give us an overview of the current state of reconciliations and reporting and payments?
Yeah, Rima, absolutely. So the current status really is that, and it has been the case for quite a few decades now, is that most of back office functions sitting within the payments industry companies tends to be pretty much manually based. So we're talking about spreadsheets here that have been around obviously since the 1990s, which obviously just lead to a lot of potential errors. So what we really see is various teams using different types of spreadsheets for pretty much the same purpose. So a lot of these teams will be using the same data, repurposing it for their different activities. So whether it's financial reporting, management information reporting, or reconciliation, they're all using the same data. So if you think about it from a management perspective, the data that I'm being presented with as, let's say, a C-suite member is very key to determining how I want my company to be run. A lot of my day-to-day decisions will be taken off the back of the reports that are presented to me. And if I do not have that confidence that the data that's been presented to me is accurate, then that kind of skews my view of where it should be going. I think as we talk about payments and the fact that digital payments are increasing on a year-by-year basis, this pressure becomes ever more present. When we also look towards the future, we see a lot of new regulations coming down the pipe, which will require a lot more compliance and auditability. I think that's one of the key things that your spreadsheets, you know, that exist in your businesses will not give you. And I think also if we look at payment firms, onboarding new payment methods can often be very, very complex. So if you're onboarding, let's say, a new network or a new process, doing all that work will impact the back office teams immensely and cause them a lot of work. I think personally that we are now in the nearly mid-20s of the century, and really we're still talking about doing things the way in which it was done when I started my career, right back at the beginning of this millennium. So I think it's time for innovation, and we see lots of great technologies coming through that will help us in multiple different ways through AI and other sort of machine learning capabilities and so forth. But really, when it comes down to the back office, is that really where we want to be, still using Excel? I think that's the key question to date.
Brian, how about you?
Mark, what really gets me about this whole reconciliation area that I think is really interesting is that all the customer-facing sides of payments are glossy and slick and new, but behind the velvet curtain is so much that goes on manually. You know, you talked about Excel spreadsheets, and I even remember when they go back to Lotus 1-2-3 spreadsheets.
Yes, I do too.
There's a lot of manual stuff that goes on that you don't envision it on the front end of the business, but it's got the really important details that make this business balance. You've got billions and billions and billions of dollars and pounds and euros going through this whole system. And this is one area that's critical to have smooth and accurate and running at a least cost basis.
I would absolutely agree with that, Brian. I think it's one of those paradoxes of our time that we have built these wonderful front-end systems. We think about the Stripes of the world. We think about everyone else who's producing such great ways in which for humans to be able to pay each other for whatever purposes, whether it's peer-to-peer or whether it's making a payment in a restaurant, whether it's splitting a check, whether it's adding tip for your waitress, all of these wonderful pieces of technology. And yet, as you said, it's all held up by an Excel spreadsheet, basically. So the proliferation of payments, as we talk about digital payments running into the trillions of dollars and beyond, it really is a surprise, I think, to see how many companies are still using sort of manual processes. And one of the key complexities that we see at Canny is that the data coming from these different organization. So the different actors in the life cycle of a payment are vastly different and come in many different shapes, forms, and sizes. And it really adds to a lot of pressure to the back office teams. And I think it's such a vital function because it underpins, obviously, the whole payments process is the fact that every actor involved can settle with each other with accuracy and confidence. And if that's removed, then there's undoubtedly issues.
Yeah, you know, as the world goes on, things get more complicated. It's just not network-branded payments today, right? You've got things like pay by bank, and there's a common thread going on that unites that whole process with the messaging format, right? The 2002, and that streamlines along. So you have the ability to get into a lot more variations with how the customer is transacting. But again, you still have behind the velvet curtain a very primitive situation trying to keep up with it. So although the front end can do it and the processing can do it, what settles this at the end of the day is really the whole challenge to make it balanced and accurate.
Yeah, absolutely. I think ISO 20022 is obviously a great way for us to get a lot more data about the transactions. It's a great way for us to have a lot more intelligence and metadata around the payments that have been transacted. But the problem with ISO 20022 is that a lot of legacy systems have not been streamlined to work with it. So there's a big disconnect between the modern tech of being able to provide a lot of information and the legacy systems that are still in place across the whole payments industry, and I have to say also beyond. If you think about it, even just a normal corporate, let's say like a Johnson & Johnson, they transact on a daily basis hundreds of millions of dollars. They too have outdated systems. So I think the whole payment space has to go through a bit of an upgrade. And if you are then on top of that complexity, adding in these sort of manual processes, the whole process becomes just more and more complex as you go through it. There's more and more information, so you have more and more data in your spreadsheet. And the reality is something like 25% of all spreadsheets globally have errors in them. That's just a simple fact. And if we looked at Enron, for example, Enron had a lot of issues that were down to spreadsheet errors. So undoubtedly, it's really, really important element to ensure that their data has been validated. It's gone through control processes. Those processes fully automated. There's hardly any human interaction with the data. So it really reduces down operational risk. And then when you look at the next layer, I think, you know, you brought up ISO 20022 there. The next layer of that ISO 20022 data really is the fact that we have great MI to report on. We have far more intelligence around customer behavior and in terms of what the customer has done. And it really adds more and more into the mix of how a reconciliation tool like Canny needs to evolve. I need to come away from the daily reconciliation. That needs to be a given. That needs to be inherently already there in order to feed the reporting machine. And that's where Canny really stands out, because we've already done that. We've already thought about that. We've already gone to the next step and done, right, well, we've got all of this data from all of these different sources. And you can imagine we take data from just under 30 different processors globally. We have all the major networks data flowing through our system already for reconciliation purposes for our customers. Well, what do we do next with that data? Well, we've got a lot of intelligence there. There's a lot to report on for our customers and beyond.
Oh, there sure is. And you know, and it's hard to make a business case for why you should operate on a spreadsheet. You've got billions going through this process and falling back on a piece of software that everybody can use, no security, limited checking, no control, just does not meet the test of what's required to run a business.
Yeah, absolutely. If we talk about the volumetrics of the payments that we're going to see over the next decade or so, it's just impossible. It really is just impossible to assume that a spreadsheet is the right way to go. And like you quite rightly say, more often than not, this is sort of legacy. It's something that someone had in a company. They've built on, they put macros in, they put all kinds of formulas in, and then they left. And here you now have got a spreadsheet that no one understands anymore. And, you know, as a company that routinely goes into payments firms to help them transition from a manual world into a fully automated world, we see this all the time. You know, the first thing they give us is a spreadsheet and say, this is how we've been doing it to date. And what they're missing on that is so much information, so much vital information, really, that they probably just haven't had the time to look at and analyze. By automating, and when we talk about automation, we talk about all of your data coming into a system overnight or real time, depending on what's available, being processed through a reconciliation process, and then having reports and outputs and dashboards, literally as the reconciler goes to work in the morning. That's the world we're talking about. So suddenly now the focus shifts away from the manual changes and formulas and manipulations to, well, let me look at the data, let me understand it a bit better. And one thing that blew my mind recently was I was talking to a bank who told me that they basically just process all chargebacks, irrespective of what the transactional amount is. Now, we have to bear in mind that a chargeback typically costs about $16 to process. So if you have a chargeback for $2, you're out of pocket straight away. So I have a lot of project managers and business owners who come to me and say, well, where's the ROI in adopting something like Canny? I've got a team doing spreadsheets right now. What is the big difference? Well, the big difference is, first of all, you are freeing up your staff to do more value add things. And let's be honest, in the macroeconomic climate we're in today, unfortunately, we are also talking about job reductions. So by automation, we can, you know, guarantee something like 50, 60% FTE reduction or FTE freeing up for other things, which is the way in which I like to focus on it. But also beyond that, then, there are other savings to be had. There are savings to be had, payment methods, so the different payment rails that were being used, being analyzed. Like if you have a customer continuously sending you wires, we all know a wire costs way more than an ACH, right? So just looking at it from that perspective, we could potentially change that customer behavior to reduce the cost to us. Secondly, we could look at chargebacks in the card network process and reduce the cost of that. So there's multiple different ways now for us to analyze the data that traditionally was just used for reconciliation and maybe settlement. Now we can look at it in a far more analytical way and say, okay, well, we can glean a lot more information of what's happening here. Another thing that has come up recently a lot, talking to processors, for example, is undocumented interchange fees. So we all have the published interchange fees that we can see on the different networks, but there's obviously those that are not published. Those are, for example, negotiated between the network and, let's say, a big box store. Now, again, that's something that each individual, one of our customers probably can't tell which is which, but we can because we have all of that data sitting in Canny and we can easily identify our way through that. And again, that can lead to potential cost savings because then forecasting becomes more accurate for settlement purposes.
Well, you know, that's a real-time issue too. There's a big U.S. network that is paying a fine through the CFPB for the inaccuracy of the interchange that has been processed for a course of 7 years. And you could be sure that's a bump. But, you know, you said something before that made me laugh, talking about trying to find the programmer who put this Excel sheet together. First thing I thought of was, that's like the same mission. I need to get a COBOL programmer to fix my legacy code. It's the same kind of challenge. It's like speaking Latin or Greek, and it's archaic language and undocumented and not a way to run a business, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, unfortunately, that's the situation we're in at the moment. And I've had friends who've done quite well out of being COBOL developers. You'd have thought they'd be unusable, but now obviously they're very much in demand. It's a simple truth, though, that we invariably spend a lot of money. And I think one of the other key things there, Brian, is that the reason why these processes and systems are still in place is because it kind of works. So why fix it? And we come across that sort of approach a lot. And my rebuttal to that would be, why do you think a process that you set up 30 years ago is fit for purpose today? It is in the essence of doing the immediate task that the process was set up for.
You know, if you start thinking about when the thing inevitably blows up, right, and it will, do you really want to face a regulator in any jurisdiction saying, here's the old Excel code that was behind all this? It's inauditable, it's not documented, and it's just not the way to run an airline, you know, it just is not. And having something that's industrial strength and proven is a much better way to face off with a regulator in any jurisdiction.
I think you made an absolutely fantastic point there, Brian. I mean, one of the things that we've also learned is that a lot of the data we reconcile actually is reusable data downstream. It actually is valuable information. I talked about MI reporting before and having analytics. One of the other things that Canny actually does is provide regulatory reports. So the regulator not only knows that there's a system in place performing these processes in an automatic fashion with auditability and an audit trail, but also that they are the recipient of the output of it. And we at Canny have worked with regulators in Ireland, Gibraltar, the UK, and other countries to ensure that, you know, the data accuracy that we provide and the reports that we provide meet their standards. So it really is a case of, as I said before, not just relying on a system or a process for a particular thing. It's like, well, what next? What can we do with this data downstream now that it's gone through these validation steps?
Yeah, neatness counts with this stuff, too. It's kind of going to an accountant with all your business receipts in a shoebox. It just sets the stage off on the
yeah.
As opposed to, here are the forms, and they're following a standard format. The inputs are this, the outputs are that, and everybody can read. It just doesn't start off the meeting in a bad state.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing we see, Brian, very much is, you know, particularly when we look at fintechs, so our customer base is quite vast in that, you know, we have the original financial institutions as our customers, we have processors, we work closely with networks. We also work a lot with fintechs, and it's interesting to see that fintechs go down the same road almost as some of the financial institutions in that they either have their process on spreadsheets or they're built in-house. And this is a classic knee-jerk reaction. I have built a front-end tool, therefore I have developers, therefore I will build my own back-end system. And within that comes a degree of fallacy because, you know, building a front-end tool is the bread and butter of the company. So there's obviously a team of engineers working on that. So often when, you know, management teams look at their back office teams and go, well, maybe we should put a system there rather than having spreadsheets, they'll take two or three developers and put them on a project. The reality is building a reconciliation tool can be simplistic, but if you really want to get value out of it, it actually takes a long time to build, a lot of focus and a lot of knowledge and intelligence around how the system is set up. And let me give you a little background to Canny. Canny was incepted by our CEO because he was working for a processor and he decided that there was nothing like Canny in the market. So he built it. And then the rest is history. In 2018, we became completely independent and became our own company. But the concept of Canny as a reconciliation reporting tool is that its genesis is in the payments industry. So it's actually built for a lot of the different pain points that we see in the payments industry. So we look at the reconciliations, but we also look at the quarterly compliance reports. So we generate QMRs for MasterCard, we generate GOCs for Visa, as well as everything else that we do. You know, we actually also look at network invoices and, you know, put them into a nice chart so it's quite visible to see for our clients what they're spending their money on and what they're settling. So really is about thinking about the problem area that you're fixing and then looking at the market and seeing what's out there. And I could see why payment companies in particular would look at all the other reconciliation tools out on the market and go, well, those don't really fit my model. Well, that's where Canny comes in. We thought this out. We've been doing this for 5 years. You know, our software is optimized for this industry, for this sector in particular. And it's a nice and easy tool to use. It's visually quite stunning as well. And it just drives the user to wanting to get more out of their data. And that's kind of the key concept here. Going away from spreadsheets, going away from the in-house builds, because those take a lot of time and effort to build. And even more so, take a lot of time and effort to maintain. And I think that's the key here. Maintenance and support for something you build in-house is very, very often underestimated.
So there's some customization on the front end when you do this, and then it goes into a structured format. What's an implementation look like time-wise? If it's a mid-sized company, how long does it take to convert?
Well, we're talking about days and weeks, really. One of the great things about Canny is that we have pre-built integration points with some of the world's largest processors and also some of the smaller ones. We work quite closely, let's say, with an FIS. We take data from I2C. We work with Marqeta, just to name a few of the 30 or so that we currently have. So out of the box, if you use any one of those 30 that we have already, it's a matter of plug and play. So if you're, let's say, a mid-size financial institution, let's say a regional, and you are, let's say, a MasterCard issuer, and let's say you use FIS, well, we can have that up and running in 2 weeks, basically. If you are slightly bigger or slightly smaller, or you use a processor that we're not currently connected with, well, we're just talking about a few more days, really, to onboard that processor. So for us, really, getting from day dot to users using, we're talking weeks.
Probably less time than it would take to explain what the spreadsheet does, right?
Very much so. Very much so.
Mark, you spoke about the need for the sector to really think about upgrading and modernization, if you will, and automation certainly plays a big role there. You know, you spoke a bit in terms of why automation is so critical right now. Can you expand a bit more and offer, you know, any examples to the audience in terms of why they should really be thinking about automation?
Yeah, well, simply put, you know, the world of payments is really exploding, and that's no surprise to anyone in any industry. We clearly saw a massive surge of digital payments throughout COVID, and that's not slowed. I mean, who still uses cash is kind of the question now. And I think that the phenomenon is global. In the US, we see a huge increase in digital payments. I mean, I myself spot this every time I visit the US, how many more places accept cards and how fewer dollar notes are in circulation. So it's really no surprise when we see that the volume of digital payments is due to hit around about just under $15 trillion by 2027. So literally just a few years off from hitting that. And I think we're just going to go beyond that. So if we think about that, and we think about the volumetrics that all of our wonderful clients are processing, it's not a surprise that spreadsheets just will creak. No, they will just be not fit for purpose. The same will be true for self-built systems as well. They do struggle, and I've seen this before, or prospective clients go up to you and say, well, we built it in-house, but it just can't handle the volume anymore. The level of business has just increased faster than expectation. And when you think about that, and you think about the scalability, and coming back to ISO 20022, we're not just talking about the scalability of the volumetric of transactions, but also what I call the width of the transaction. So I think of it in terms of the actual record of the transaction itself. If you think about, let's say, a CSV file or a spreadsheet, that increases. Suddenly, you've got a lot more data in the message, a lot more information to run. And with that comes its own complications with legacy systems. With that comes their own complications in updating something you've built in-house or a spreadsheet. When you buy Canny or product like Canny, what you actually get is a system that's designed around this. We know in advance when things change. So scalability is already there out of the box. So Canny is like a SaaS-enabled platform that allows us to go into the hundreds of millions of records per day, if not billions of records per day and beyond. But also, it's also designed and built around the concept of data being more and more accessible. So a lot more metadata to be processed through. And you know, again, let's think about this holistically. Let's think about this from a perspective of, well, yes, I know I need to do reconciliation. Let's just assume that's already done. What next with this information? And if the more information we have, the better the process becomes. The more information we have, the better the analytics are. And more information we have, the better forecasting we can do as well. So we provide insights into what's going to happen in your future for your company in terms of your settlement amounts. We can actually glean from your past history and your current transactional volume to see, you know, what's next down the road. And at least with that can come much more accurate budgeting. In terms of thinking about this even further, it's like thinking about the whole back office structure as a whole and thinking beyond reconciliation reporting. So what else is there? I mentioned chargebacks before, but there's also treasury management process that we can integrate into our system. Our system actually can provide a lot more information than you think as well in terms of being enriched through third-party data. So we're working with partners, for example, at the moment, partners who will provide us with APIs to enrich the data set. So, you know, we can actually talk about the transaction and the CO2 emissions that exist around that transaction, so we can enrich that data. When we also look at, let's say, the vendor you purchased something from, so let's say you went to make a purchase at McDonald's down the road from your house, the way in which that is presented today to you in, let's say, your bank statement app is probably quite obscure. It doesn't clearly just say McDonald's. It might have other information on there that's particular to the franchise that you went to, so a franchise name. But we have the ability to clean that up by working with third-party partners who provide us that sort of real-time information back into Canny and allows us to present a much cleaner record of the transactions.
Well, that's one of the big deals with this whole thing too, Mark, is if you get into the thought of having to develop this in-house versus buying it off the shelf. You talked about the implementation time being measured in weeks as opposed to really building a team and the number of people I have to put in to think this through. The time of getting it through a corporate turnover just seemed to be light years away.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I've been working in reconciliation for 20 years for my sins. And I can honestly say that if you were to try and build something in-house, it probably will take you at a minimum 6 months and three people at a bare minimum. That means that you have three key engineers that you're probably paying a premium rate for doing something that's not value add to your product. So they're not sitting on your app, building your app. They're sitting in the back office building something that's pre-exists somewhere else and that you could purchase off the shelf from Canny for a reasonable price. which is probably much less per year than you're going to spend on the entire implementation. So it really is a different way of looking at it. As I said before, a lot of companies tend to think that just because they can build it themselves, they should. I would question that. Do you really want to go down that road of pain? And do you want to spend a lot of money on something that probably in 2 to 3 years' time is no longer going to be fit for purpose because the whole industry will have moved on? And let me talk about something else. When we think about reconciliation, reconciliation tools tend to, whether in-house built or the other reconciliation tools on the street, tend to be rules-based. So we have a set of rules. Those rules are run against the data set, and then we have results off the back of that. The problem with that is that there's still a lot of unreconciled items that still need to be manually processed, where we see things like partial matches, where the records haven't fully matched, but they kind of do. They should have done, but they didn't do because the rule is quite set in how it's structured. Now, for me, the future is AI, right? I honestly think there's much more intelligent ways of performing matching, and systems can learn from human behavior through machine learning as well. So what we often see in some of our client bases who have, let's say, another recon tool, a legacy recon tool before we come along, they will have these rule-based approaches. They will then, at the end of the day, still have, let's say, 1,000 records to go and manually go through. And it still takes them a lot of time to do that. So we're not quite there yet. We're still reasonably rules-based at the moment. But in the very near future, we will have algorithmic and AI matching capabilities with ML capability within that, which will speed up the process. Absolutely. And provide a lot more accuracy. And that, I think that's definitely the way in which we will go in the future.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, my experience with this is, you know, when you get into a workflow where you're dealing with tons and tons of units, you want to deal with exceptions, not the zillions of transactions that are not exceptions, right? So when you start honing it down, it lets you do that. Then you get into the challenge of, you know, even the people you're going to staff in that area, you can, using less people, you could afford to pay for more competence, right? And it becomes a whole self-learning loop that integrates into the front end.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the UK, we did some surveys and we discovered that something like 700,000 hours per week are spent on reconciliations. And if we look at that versus a medium-sized business, which are about 3.6 hours, which I think is very conservative. I mean, I've worked in a lot of organizations where the reality is it's much greater than that. And people tend to forget as well that when we think about a person performing a reconciliation task, we think about them literally sitting there doing the spreadsheet. What we're not thinking about is the fact that they don't know everything and they have to go and ask other people. So for me, there's always this, what I call a hidden cost. The hidden cost is everyone else who's involved in the process. And there's so many people involved in the process. It's really, really frightening. I mean, I was talking to a large bank recently about doing their QMR reports and asked them how many people are working on it. And they said, oh, not that many, about 2 or 3 people. Guess my surprise when we had our first call with them to look at their requirements and 20 people turned up. That's how many people are really, truly involved in the process. And that, for me, is the hidden cost. It's the thing that we forget is that there's far more people involved.
20 people, but that means you've got the front-end people, you've got their managers. That's two lines of managers above them that manage 20 people. And so much of this, I was involved in this with a major New York bank decades ago, and it was such a nasty process where you'd have to double key this just for accuracy to get the input on this. And it just becomes redundant work and so much waste. When you're not putting your time you should be spending is to work with the items and understand where the exceptions are, right? And then building processes upstream that take care of them rather than spotting flies every day when you're going through the production volume.
Yeah, Brian, absolutely. And there's one other consideration I'd like to throw into this. And I'm going to show my age again by referencing the beginning of my career here. When I started my career in 2000, I was working for Credit Suisse First Boston in Zurich in Switzerland. My first job was spending my entire day doing photocopying, and this is kind of pre-Excel, even using a highlighter to highlight the matches between things, right? I think where we are today, that's no longer an introduction that we would want the new generation to have into our businesses. I think when we look at the new wave of employees coming on board, what they're really looking for is obviously to add value straight away. I know I did. but that wasn't an option for me. But why shouldn't it be today? Why shouldn't it be an option for the younger generation today to come into a business and say, well, I don't want to do photocopying. Obviously, that's no longer the case. But why are we doing things on spreadsheets? And why am I manipulating data? And why am I doing this? And why am I doing that? When we have all this modern tech. And when you think about staff retention, particularly graduates who come into your business, you don't want them just to do the graduate program and then leave. You want to keep them. You're investing in them. You're investing in the future of the business. And you want these young people to feel like they're valued from the get-go. I also think that reconciliation tools or other tools that provide high degrees of automation, and I mean really high degrees of automation, looking beyond the reconciliation, but looking even to automating the exception processing and workflows of that, and the AI and ML capabilities that sit behind that of recognizing every month this problem happens. So therefore, if we can't remediate it at source, let's remediate it from an automation standpoint. All of these things should be in place. And if they are, then junior staff will feel like they're valued because now they're looking at the information, they're looking at the data, and they're actually analyzing it. I have seen this so often where I've seen qualified accountants performing very manual tasks for 10, 20 years. It's soul destroying, and we really don't want that going forward.
As we come to an end, Mark, both you and Brian spoke to how everything right now is reconciled. Can you speak to, as you look ahead, what's next for Dana?
Yeah, what's next for Dana is quite simple. As I said at the outset of this conversation, I think for me, what's really important is for my customers to realize that canning is not an end station. All too often, the word reconciliation kind of conjures up a notion of a process. Well, when it's done, it's done. The reality is that the process has taken data and it's validated that data and it's put that data into what you could call a data warehouse of sorts. Canny has a common data model. So it doesn't matter where the data has come from. It goes through the reconciliation process in its native form, its natural form, but then it's transformed into a common data model. That allows me then to view data from Visa, MasterCard, FIS, Fiserv, I2C, Marketo, whoever else, in the same way. So now I can layer reports above that. I can perform analytics on that. And I think this is where Canny really stands out for me as a reporting platform, is that ability to take that data then to the next step. So we provide a lot of MI reports at this point in time. We've got, I think, 35 different reports for different teams. So whether you're sitting in the accounting team, whether you're sitting in the management team, whether you're sitting, you know, in a compliance team, all of that data is packaged for your viewing in the way in which you want to see it. We also have in-system dashboards as well that can be triggered on alerts. So if something spikes, we can have an alert there and it will alert you to the fact that there's something you need to go and look at, whether it's just a reporting item or whether it's actually a reconciliation issue. And I think this is where the real value of Canny comes in, is it's a UI that really allows the user to navigate quite easily to what they need to see. And we can also, of course, send reports automatically by email as well. So all of that is contained within the one platform. And I say, if you were to take all of the functionalities that we have and try and build that yourself, it would take you a very long time. And you could not get anywhere near as far with the spreadsheet. So looking forward, Canny has been very much a hidden gem that we've kept ourselves in Europe. But looking to 2024, Canny will be in the United States, and we're very excited about the opportunity of entering this market. We think we have a lot of value to offer to our new clients and our new friends across the pond. We will be setting up an office in Q1, probably in Atlanta, in Transaction Alley, for a very good reason. And that is because obviously that's where we think we add the most value. But I honestly think that there's so much to be learned from our product, and we would love to speak to anyone who would be interested in talking to us.
Thank you both so much for sharing the challenges and opportunities in payments reconciliation and why embracing automation could be the key to staying ahead of the game. And thanks to everyone for tuning in today. Be sure to subscribe and stay updated on the latest Payments Journal episodes. And don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues.